Accession number 210591, Reel 1.
Eric Wheeler, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Warminster.
Which year was this?
1920.
Did both your mother and father come from Warminster?
Yes.
What did your father do for a living?
Well, mainly he was a maltster. We had a malt house in Warminster. But during the summer, they were shut down in those days, and he had to find alternative work.
What type of things did he find?
Well, farmer, usually, or sometimes on the building sites.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Warminster?
Yes, that's right, yes, went to school in Warminster.
Which school did you go to?
Sanborn.
How old were you when you finished there?
Oh, 14.
In 1934?
That's right, yeah.
Did you get a job?
Yes. Actually, I worked in a clothing shop. But I've got to admit, I wasn't very happy there.
Why not?
Well, I'm not cut out for shop work, I don't think.
So, did you change your job?
Yes. I worked for a while on the School of Infantry, the barracks out there. And then after that, I worked in a silk factory.
What job were you doing at the School of Infantry?
Oh, on the electrical side, installing the electric fittings and that. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, because that was... No, at that time, we had already been called up.
Had you joined the...
When they brought conscription in, we joined the local territorials. And we were mobilised a week before the war started.
What was the local territorial unit called?
The 4th Wilts. 4th Battalion of the Wiltshire Regiment.
What kind of experience did you have with the TA before war was declared?
Well, only a few months. Because I didn't join until April 39.
Can you describe the type of things that you did?
Well, we went to one camp in the summer, but apart from that, it was the evening meetings about once a week. It was drill, basic training for us, you see.
Did you use weapons?
Oh, yeah, we fired rifles and LMGs.
What did you feel about the news that war had been declared?
Well, we were more or less expecting it, actually. I remember the Sunday before, we'd meet out on the ranges firing. And when we got back to the drill hall, we naturally thought we'd go home. But we were hanging about for about an hour. And then the sergeant he fell us all in, and he said, you can go home, but come back with enough kit. He meant smalls. For the rest of the week, and we had to be back within the hour. And when I got home and told our parents, me mum said, oh, she said, there's going to be a war then. And a week later, a war was declared. We were up at Porton Down, the experimental up on Salisbury Plain. We were up there at the time, and I think we heard it in the Naffy when it was about midday. Something like that.
Did you feel dismayed?
Well, as I say, everyone really knew it was coming at that date. So we just accepted it, you see.
What happened to you next?
Well, we stayed at Porton the whole of the winter.
Doing what?
Oh, just guard duties. We were doing guard duties about 6 nights a week up there. Because in those days, I suppose that the authorities had the idea that the German paratroops be dropping on key centres, like Salisbury Plain training area. And we were out every night and every day, more or less, on guard duties.
And then?
Well, then, in the spring of 1940, we moved down to Shaftesbury, which is only about 15 miles down the road. And we started training then.
What form of training?
Oh, normal military, you know, maneuvers and not just drill, but army training for war, you know. Well, then came the German attack through France, and then we were moved to around the London area. And what happened, we were stationed in certain towns for just a couple of weeks at a time. This was when the invasion threat was on, you see. And apparently, the people in those areas wanted to see troops, especially in the southeast of England. So we kept moving around. We stayed at Luton, a place called Chesham. Now, oh, we stayed at Woking for a couple of weeks. But then, eventually, we moved up to a place called Saffron Walden in Essex. In our role there, there were two or three aerodromes in that area. And one of our roles was to counterattack those in case they were attacked by the German paratroops, you see. Then another role we had to be prepared to dash out to the east coast in case they landed a force there. Another role we had, someone had the idea, if he invaded, he would drop a screen of paratroops to the north of London to stop the reinforcements getting down there. So we had to be prepared to dash down there. But at that time, you see, things were so chaotic and we just didn't have the troops to do all the jobs they considered necessary. So there was a great deal of uncertainty about the whole situation.
Did you think the Germans would invade?
Well, we didn't know. I didn't have any definite ideas on it. But I think the higher in command you went, the more certain there would be an invasion. Because the higher military authority, says, I suppose, regarded it from a purely military point of view. And that is, the Germans were up against an army who were utterly and completely defeated. Every bit of equipment we sent to France was left over there. And the regular army had been more or less decimated. But after Saffron Walden, we went down to Folkestone on the southeast coast for coast defence. And we stayed, I think we went down about the end of August or September. And we stayed there the whole winter.
Was there any shelling from across
the
channel?
Oh, quite a lot, yes. And well, although we noticed most of the aerial activity was just inland. Of course, during the Battle of Britain, they were bombing the airfields all the time. Occasionally, they did give us a bit of a bombing or strafing down on the coast.
Was this the German Air Force?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
But was there any actual artillery shelling across the channel?
When we were at Dover for some time, and that was quite regular.
Did that do any damage?
Oh, quite a lot, yes. In the houses and the buildings and that.
Did any bombs or shells fall near you?
Some of the shells did, but we didn't have a lot of bombing down there. Yeah. Got a bit, of course, but not a great deal. As I say, the German Air Force was concentrating inland a bit more. And we realised that if there was going to be an invasion, then they would attack the coast defences first.
What rank did you have at this time?
Oh, I think it was a Lance Corporal at that time, that's right. But then, we stayed there the winter. And then in the spring, we moved back inland and really started intensive training then. Intensive battle training and all that.
What did that consist of?
Oh, long skill maneuvers. Quite a bit of live firing down on the South Downs. And these exercises, maneuvers, would last about 10 days or a fortnight, I suppose. It was pretty intensive at one time.
Any incidents that happened to you at that time?
Nothing outstanding, I think. No, I can't remember any really sort of dangerous things happening like that. No. Because we were one of the divisions that stayed in England nearly the whole war. And then just after D-Day, we moved over to France.
Which division were you in?
The 43rd Wessex Division.
Do you remember which company and platoon you were in at that time?
Oh, yes. I was in C Company. 14th Platoon of C Company. And until the Arnhem battles, and then our A Company had been decimated at Arnhem, and after that they didn't want to put all the reinforcements, especially the youngsters from England, into one company, so they moved around some of the more experienced players, people, into A Company.
So you changed from C to A?
C to A, that's right, yes.
Coming back to England earlier on, were you happy in this battalion?
Oh yeah, quite happy. We had a very good relationship with each other and our officers. We had some very good officers in our regiment.
So you were training with the division in the southeast of England?
That's right, yes. In fact, at one time, the locals in that place used to call us the Kent Home Guard. Because we stayed there virtually the whole of the war. Yeah.
What do you remember happening next?
Oh, we went over to France about 10 days after D-Day.
Can you tell me about the preparations that you and the unit made for going to France, going to Normandy?
Well, we've been training all that time, you see. And we were more or less prepared to go straight into battle then. So there were no sort of special preparations or anything like that.
Can you tell me about the voyage across?
Oh, terrible. I was really sick. We were on these light landing craft. And it was we had a terrific storm during the night, and I myself was very sad, and many other blokes were as well. And I think we landed at Arromanches, and then marched into a concentration area.
Where did you sail from?
We sailed from New Haven.
Do you remember what you took with you on the cross-channel voyage?
Oh, just battle order. That was a small pack.
Did you consume anything on the voyage?
I didn't know. There was plenty of rations there. A lot of this self-heating soup that we had at that time.
And this was D plus 10?
Pardon?
This was D plus 10?
Something like that, yes. I think it was, yes.
What impression did the beaches make on you on arrival?
Well, to us, it was a bit chaotic. But we just marched up through them and straight away to a concentration area.
What happened at the concentration area?
We just stayed there for about a couple of days.
Doing what?
Oh, just, well, at that time, that storm was happening in the channel. And we had to wait 2 or 3 days for our transport to catch up with us.
What rank were you by then?
Oh, corporal by then, that's right.
Did you get attacked by the enemy in the concentration area?
No, we didn't. One of our other brigades got attacked. But we were lucky in that respect.
And then?
We moved up into battle then. I think our first job was on the left flank of the 15th Scottish Division, who were putting in quite a big attack. And the main thing there was the heavy enemy shell fire. That was the main problem.
Did that cause casualties?
Oh yeah, always a few casualties. Yeah.
Any near you?
Oh yeah, in our own company, yes. Mm-hmm. Just only one or two, mind. We got off a bit lightly, I think, then.
Mm. Were you moving forward, or were you in trenches, or what?
We actually, at that time, we were at a standstill. Whether the Germans realised we got there and shelled the area, I don't know. Or whether it was just routine shelling of the area.
Were you dug in?
No, we weren't dug in then. No, we didn't have to. We were prepared to move on.
Were you in woodland or open land?
Oh, open land, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So were you waiting like this for long?
Oh, no, only about half an hour.
And then what?
Then we moved on up then, you see, and took up positions.
Is this daytime?
No, this was by night. I think we had to wait till darkness fell. And then, of course, we weren't under observation then.
By whom?
Oh, by the enemy, you see, yeah.
And then?
We took up positions and dug in. Well, don't ask me where we were. We didn't have a clue. But we just dug in and waited there for a day or two.
Under fire?
Oh, that was on all the time, I mean. Yeah.
How frightening was all this? How frightening was all this?
Well, normally, the first time you come under any fire, of course, you are scared, there's no doubt about it. But as the days wore on, you come to accept that sort of thing.
Were you doing any firing yourself at this time?
Not at this time, no.
What's your next memory?
Our next memory is a... Oh, it was an attack on a place called Hill 112. And that was a very heavy... That was a whole divisional attack, you see. But by that time, we had pretty good artillery support, you see. And we attacked on this hill and moved into the top of it. And by that time, most of the Germans had gone. I think the artillery really had driven them out, you see. And we dug in on the side of this hill. Well, we stayed around 112 for a couple of weeks, I suppose. Occasionally we had to move position from one side to the other. And then we were withdrawn from there for an attack on a village called Moltot.
Can you remember anything that happened in those 2 weeks on Hill 112?
Well, mainly it was a artillery fire. And then on one or two occasions, there was a bit of a tank battle when our tank did come up to the top of the hill, and they were taken on by the German anti-tank guns and the German armour on the in the distance. Yeah, the one thing I do remember is the noise of the ricochets off the tanks. They seemed to snarl through the air. And we did say, if we got caught with one of those, it would be the end of it, yeah.
So you were just in the same place for 2 weeks?
In the same area, yes. But as I say, we were moved out then for an attack on a place called Moltot.
Can you take me through that, please?
Yeah. Apparently, one of our other brigades had more or less occupied Moltot a week or two before, but they'd been driven out. And we were assigned to take to attack the... We ourselves attacked the wood running along the banks of the River Orne, I think it was. And we attacked that. It was on a Saturday night evening. And as we approached this wood, we came under very heavy fire. And then about a few seconds, more than half our platoon were out of action. Anyway, we had a bit of help from the right-hand platoon, and we managed to clear out this machine gun nest. And then, but by then, our platoon was down to about 8 men.
How did you clear out the machine gun nest?
Well, with the help from the right-hand platoon attacking from the right, and ourselves attacking from the front, we managed to overcome them. But then we continued the advance.
So you had to attack in the teeth of machine gun fire? You had to attack in the teeth of machine gun fire?
Oh, yes, we had to, yes.
How did you do it?
Well, just blaze away, you know, toward the enemy and keep up the advance.
Did any machine gun bullets come near you?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't hit. But that's one of the amazing things about the war, I always found. A man standing next to you can get hit, and you don't. Anyway, we had to continue this advance, and at the other end of the wood, there was another machine gun post. And we lost two more men then. But this was in very dense cover. And we noticed, or I noticed, these blokes would fire a couple of bursts, and then they'd move, you see. And at one point, oh, that's right. At one point, we were looking up towards our right, and I can remember saying, I think they're over there. But these machine gunners, they fired from our left. And the man kneeling next to me was hit, but I wasn't. Anyway, of course, we ducked away from there. I ducked away from there. And then I suppose we were stalking each other throughout the undergrowth. And I glanced round, and I happened to see the helmet of one of them over to the left. So I just dashed forward and took them prisoner. So that was the end of that.
What were you armed with?
Oh, just a Sten gun.
Not a rifle?
Well, I was a section commander, had Sten guns, you see. Yeah.
What was your section?
A rifle section, yeah. But having taken them prisoner, we went then, and that was the end of our objective. We just dug in, just outside the wood on top of the hill.
How many did you capture?
Oh, there were only two of them.
Did they put up any resistance?
No, when they saw me, or rather, I shouted out to them. And they whipped round and saw me. And then they put their hand up.
Were they just ordinary German infantrymen?
Oh, yes, I think they were.
What condition did they seem to be in?
Oh, good condition. Yes. They weren't very old, but they looked hard and fit, these men. Yeah.
Did you speak to them in any way?
No, we just told them to disarm them. So we disarmed them and then sent them on back. No. There is one thing I've always remembered about that. Just before we went into this attack, we had to wait for reinforcements. Because we were down to about 15 men, about half strength, you see. Well, the reinforcements came up one day, and we went into battle the next day. Well, we'd lost quite a number of our platoon, you see. And after the battle, the company sergeant major came round, asking me what had happened to Private So-and-so or Private So-and-so. And I didn't even know them. It was a very awkward situation. I knew the one or two men in my own section, but the other members of the platoon, the newcomers, well, I didn't know them, of course. What? So I couldn't give him any information.
What did the CSM think to that?
Well, he understood the situation, you see. But it was the sort of thing, I suppose, that was continually happening in war. Not just to our unit, but to everybody else.
What was the level of morale in the unit at that time?
Well, after a battle like that, especially so early on, it does shake you up a bit. But I noticed that we sort of were able to get over it quite quickly. I do think that the 2 or 3 years hard training we had in England helped us. The one thing I found, the physical hardship side of going into battle hardly affected us. Because we've been doing that in England for a couple of years. Long route marches, plenty of digging in, out in all weathers.